very, very different phases, right? So you find topologically ordered phases, right, which have various interesting properties. You find various phases with broken symmetries. So some of them Philip and Alan described. Right, you find stripes and bubbles. Right, and also you find non-Fermi liquid type states. So non-Fermi liquid states. Right, so really it's a very broad variety. So, and of course, studying this with gallium arsenide was extremely fruitful, but there were certain things which remained out of reach, right? So, and let me mention a couple of limitations. So one, perhaps most important limitation is that effective interactions with gallium arsenide are not tunable or tunable very in a very small interval, let's say, with parallel magnetic field, so as Eduardo mentioned, right? So limited tunability of interactions. So what this means in practice, right? So let's say I can parametrize my effective interaction with Haldane pseudo potentials, right? So let's say only first few of them are most important, but what this means that using gallium arsenide, I have access only to very small part of this phase space, right? So I can access only, let's say, n equals zero Landau level and slightly around, right? Let's say tuning well widths and applying parallel field n equal one, n equal two, right? And that's about it, right? So and in particular, right, for example, if you want to stabilize some state, or if you want to study a phase transition between, let's say, non-Fermi liquid state and fractional quantum Hall state and stripe and bubble state, and for example, study the possible coexistence of translational symmetry breaking and topological order, right, you really don't have a knob to do that. And another important limitation is that of course the samples are buried, right? They're part of some big three-dimensional structure, and it's much harder to get to it. It's much harder to let's say control quasiparticles. And it really looks like graphene, in a particular bilayer graphene, are free of some of these limitations. Right. So let me briefly describe the idea. So let me concentrate on bilayer graphene. Although you would see that the ideas are actually general, right? So as we already heard from Philip's talk and from Alan's talk, so it has this unusual dispersion relation, right? So it has parabolic bands which touch at a point, and right? So it has effective Hamiltonian, which looks something like that, where pi is px plus ipy. And really the knob that you have is that you can apply perpendicular electric field to your sample. And in this way, you can add the tunable gap, okay? And this gap can be made very large, right? This gap can be made much larger than the cyclotron energy. In practice, this means, for example, if I'm thinking about higher Landau levels, this means that by tuning this gap, right, I can actually interpolate, right? I can explore different mixture of pseudo potentials corresponding to, let's say, zeros and second Landau level, right? So, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yes. Of course. Yeah. Right. And what this means, right? So, for example, let me pictorially, let's say, plot effective interactions for n equals zero Landau level here and for n equal to here. So, in the absence of this gap, right, my effective interactions for first Landau level of bilayer graphene are sitting here, but by applying this gap, I can push them in different directions. And depending on the, right, so as you said, sign of the gap matters, right? And for one valley, I would push it closer to the zero, and for the other, I would push it closer to two, right? And I think this could be potentially very interesting because this way, and essentially experiment allows you to cover this whole space, right? Go all the way, right? So I think this is potentially quite interesting because one can really, really start from n equal two, where you have n equal two, where you have stripes and bubbles, yeah, and then you can study how this disappears and how it transforms eventually to the fractional quantum Hall state. But then, for example, you could at filling factor, at partial filling 1/2, right, you can see maybe how you go from stripes to Pfaffian state and then to the non-thermiliquid state. Okay, so and this is just one example of this tunability. There are actually many others. So for example, there is this degeneracy of the zeros Landau level, right? So this orbital degeneracy. Effectively, the cyclotron gap between zero and one closes, and you have very strong Landau level mixing. Right, so this is also a new regime of effective interactions. So overall, the hope is that with these materials, right, you can explore some bigger fraction of the space of effective interactions and study phase transitions and maybe find some interesting new fractions. How do you do this? How do you tune?
The coupling constants.
Coupling constants, so. Right. Overall scale, you mean?
Yeah.
Right, this is another way, right? So you could, let's say, you could engineer substrate. Yeah, let's say this is your sample, and you can. Right, let's say you have your boron nitride, and you can vary its thickness, right? And in principle, this screens, right? If you have non-uniform substrate, it screens you in some interesting way. So this is an extra knob, which also, so one can show that this is useful tunability. And so this is, I think, this is one thing that is would be interesting, and maybe one can experimentally study old physics, which was not studied enough, and understand it better. But of course, there are a few other interesting things which are new. So one was mentioned by Philip and Titus. So you can apply periodic modulation, right, and try to really study some of the fractional Chern insulator physics, right? And another thing that I want to mention is the edges, right? Because one of the things which really was not completely understood, and there were many puzzles, right, was edge state physics in gallium arsenide, right? So and with graphene, it seems like that you can control confinement, and you can try to see if Shaogang theory works everywhere or just at a few points, right? So, but this is, I think, another very interesting direction, and also from theory side, understanding better edge reconstruction and what is universal and what is not. So let me stop here.
So maybe I have a set of your questions. So we know that in the gallium arsenide, the deep and Landau level have deep interaction, which actually gave you quite different hierarchy. So
yes.
in the second Landau level or first Landau level, according to Magarello, is that you make at the even not in states. But I wonder, what do you have a similar thing here for the graphene case? Even Landau level has very different impacts in the
They do. Thing is that so if you start right, so thing is that if you consider monolayer or bilayer without a gap, right, you get an equal weight super. So for higher Landau levels, you get an equal weight mixture of let's say 0 and 2,
okay.
And then you can control it, right? So you get this family.
But usually in the higher Landau level, you have the Hawley core interaction. That same thing for the graphene. You know, in the gallium arsenide, we have a picture. In the lowest Landau level, you have a scaled function.
Yes.
In
but
the higher Landau level, it's more like Hawley core, and you make that like two different hierarchies.
Yes. So,
similar
right. So, The only thing, unfortunately, it turns out that if you consider first lambda level of monolayer graphene, right, it's mixture of 0 and 1, and this really looks short range. Right, okay. So this does not give you Pfeiffian, for example.
I see. But 2 would make difference.
Two makes a difference, but then you already tip to the stripes, right? So I think really what you want to do is tune, right? And
so, so what you don't have here that you do in Gary Marcinelli there, they can work either in white quantum wells or heterostructures, and that changes the formal interaction.
Yes.
Here, that part you cannot do. You can change the substrate.
I can change the substrate, right?
But and it's exposed, which is a good thing. But on the other hand, I'm not sure how much you can actually change effective coupling. It's mostly the chemistry of carbon, right?
But the substrate matters, right? Because I need to change things on the magnetic length scale, right? And that I can do one can do very well, right? This is exactly the thickness of the substrates is in the right regime, and you can tune ratio of pseudo potentials by
lateral confinement, which is what people were using.
That you cannot change, of course. This
is out of the
question.
This
is out of the question. Now, actually, let me mention another thing very quickly. So, recently, actually, there was a report of fractional quantum Hall state with even denominator in bilayer graphene, and had a relatively big gap, so something like half a Kelvin. That was in this regime of strong Landau level mixing. So, and this is very new, so I think there are many things to be understood there.
There is a paper by Station Q on this like generalized edge transformations, like beyond the classic or beyond the equivalence class. That is basically in your paper. So since you have, and much of that depends on adding lambda levels, and since you have so many here, is there any chance of seeing such transitions in the edge physics?
I think this is a good question. So I don't think anybody thought about it. I mean, there is very little. In terms of edges, there is, in general, very little work.
So, in fact, they have an example there where there is a transition of the edge which doesn't change the bulk.
These are all not changing the bulk.
This is a bulk edge big transition, right?
Yeah.
But maybe here, this product of potential is actually quite interesting. And, people study this anion superfluid theory for a while, but the reason we don't have anion superfluid in quantum Hall states is because anions don't go straight line, just do second motion. Mm-hmm. And if there's some way to add periodic modulation in the quantum Hall states, then anion will interfere with the periodic modulation. We are moving straight line, and if this lattice is perfect, I think we will see anion superfluid. So there's another way to get a supermatter.
Can you specify what is the PVDC you need to see that goes through?
Okay, the periodic, that's a tricky thing. It's we hope that the periodic of land is such that when anion go around this union cell, you'll see a phase 2 pi. Mm-hmm. So there's a very specific, so this is the most optimal case, you'll see the phase 2 pi. So therefore, the lattice spacing about the lattice magnetic length. So it's pretty large. So this is something worked against that. And because my magnetic field is not strong enough, so.
For sure, what do you say goes around? I mean, it's a Galilean invariant system still.
No, we'll add a periodic potential.
No, without that, the composite fermion picture, the composite fermion or boson will go around in circles, but the anion doesn't feel a magnetic field.
So it seems that if you want to get a superconductor, anion has to carry electric charge.
Yes.
So the interact is a background magnetic field. And so they do sectional motion.
But there is no background magnetic field.
Not in graphene, yes.
No, but in general, in the case of the anions, there is no anion.
No, I mean.
Oh, you mean the
fractional
quantum Hall effect?
Yes. Okay. We have a. Certainly,
if you're
near Iran, you don't have that problem. But that's another.
I
think we'll have to look at the next one. Maybe let's
thank you again. I think you took more than the time you needed, right? Yeah. So I can take less. Okay. Okay, so maybe I just have one thing for discussion and one question. So one thing I learned about here was stars. And so I think you asked a question about good materials or interesting materials, okay? Okay. So there are two axes for goodness or interestingness. One is this axis, has a star, of course. S stands for strange or something new, maybe let's say newness. And another axis is, let's say, this is temperature or how difficult the physical conditions under which you might achieve this physics are to realize. And so I realized that there's a, in this space, you can draw contours of goodness. And so I think that, you know, many people in this group would draw a contour, something like this. This is good. And I learned here that this is the Montreal Canadian curve. And many people might draw the curve like that. And that's the Toronto curve. So it's interesting to think about what are we trying to achieve as a community? And do we want flat curves or vertical curves or 45 degree curves? Something to think about. But I wanted to bring up something which is, so I kind of go back and forth on these curves. And I have a question that came up from my vertical self. Okay, so I have a question. Just came up by accident. I discovered something kind of by accident, which I should have understood in a more general way, but and that was this. So this is to do with the magnetism. So magnetism is, you know, magnetism in materials is mostly this curve. There are lots of materials that are magnetic until they melt. And so one property of magnetic systems is that they have a Hall effect, and they have a Hall effect that's not related to Rolle's force, which is anomalous, called anomalous Hall effect, and has been mentioned several times during this workshop, that there's a Karplus-Luttinger contribution to the Hall effect. People normally call this the intrinsic anomalous Hall effect nowadays. And it's just a band structure property related to the Berry curvature of the bands. And one of the, there's no, you know, if you have an insulator, this is the Hall effect. If you have a metal, you hope this is a big part of the Hall effect, and it seems like often it is. And one of the merits of this Hall effect contribution is it's very easy to calculate, at least, if you know the band structure of any material. And in the history of, you know, going back to Hall, to Mr. Hall's initial experiments, where he discovered the anomalous Hall effect, it was normal to say the anomalous Hall effect is proportional to the magnetization in the system, and the magnetization is sort of measuring how strongly time reversal symmetry is broken in the material. But the question comes up, can the anomalous Hall effect be non-zero in an antiferromagnet? And the answer is yes, yes, by specific example. And I want to sort of see if this community can make a more precise statement about what the conditions are to have a non-zero anomalous Hall effect. So it, in a metal, let's say, or in an insulator too. Yeah, that's just yeah. So the material in which we is mainly postdoctoral researcher Hua Chen, who's working with me, discovered that the is an antiferromagnetic material, and by explicit calculation, he discovered that its anomalous Hall effect is non-zero. And so what is this material? This material is manganese 3 iridium. It's an antiferromagnet. It's non-collinear. I'm going to describe it a little bit in just a second. It actually has a critical temperature of around 1,000 Kelvin. And it's widely used, and you know, it's in everybody's everybody's hard disk. And I know how to prove that the anomalous Hall effect can be non-zero in an antiferromagnet by explicit calculation. And I know that in some antiferromagnets, you can prove it's zero. And so the anomalous Hall effect is zero when you can go from, you can divide, when you have a collinear bipartite type antiferromagnetic order, when the combination of time reversal and a translation from one sublattice to the other is zero. This system obviously doesn't have this property. In fact, in this system, the structure is, it's basically an FCC crystal. And as you know, so FCC crystals have 4 atoms per cubic unit cell. And you can think of this material as an FCC crystal in which the magnetic atoms, which are more or less the manganese in the system, are on the faces of the cube, and the iridiums, which are essentially non-magnetic in the system, are on the simple cubic lattice. Okay? And so if you this structure consists of can be viewed as consisting of stacked Kagame lattices. And it has, it doesn't have this symmetry. It has, so Kagame lattices, of course, have triangles, and every triangle has this typical triangle 120 degree structure. That's the magnetic structure of this material. And, right. And so if you just make a single Kagame layer, then you can show that it has a, and you sort of make one of these 120 degree magnetic structures on this Kagame, you can show that time reversal plus mirror symmetry in the plane of the Kagame plus inversion symmetry is is a good quantum number. And because you don't have this symmetry, you don't have Cramer's theorem, you don't have, the bands are not doubly degenerate as they are in a bipartite metallic ferromagnet. Nevertheless, when you have these symmetries, you have this typical odd property of the Berry curvature of the bands. Right, so you can prove when you have these symmetries that the Berry curvature actually, they're singly degenerate bands, the Berry curvature vanishes identically everywhere. Now what happens in manganese 3 iridium is that, you know, as I said, it's FCC, and when you look at it in the 111 direction, you get stacked FCCs, and it has ABC structure, right? And so when you stack them together, it no longer has the mirror symmetry, and that's sufficient to actually make the anomalous Hall effect non-zero and actually large as it... You can say it's ABC, ABC, yeah. So it's some kind of spiral, I guess. And so that's an example of an antiferromagnet. Antiferromagnetic materials have some advantages for use in spintronic devices. And it's interesting that in principle, you can measure its magnetic state by simply measuring a Hall coefficient. I'm not sure it's useful, but the question I'm asking is if somebody can try and say more precisely, classify antiferromagnets according to zero anomalous Hall effect, non-zero anomalous Hall effect, and does the same classification presumably applies for orbital magnetization and other spin orbit coupled related indications of time reversal symmetry breaking. Okay, that's all.
Thank you.
So I wonder if you put this a single layer on some substrate, you also kind of break this up and down. So it does that imply you have a non-zero Berry curvature then?
If you could make a single layer of this material and put it on a substrate, it should have a non-zero anomalous. Whether anybody can make a material like that, I have absolutely no idea.
There's another material that's probably somewhat similar, it's MnSi, manganese silicon. And that one has a phase which is a spiral, and there I think they do see the anomalous qualified, but under pressure it has a phase where it partially melts that structure.
I know this manganese silicide has a Sturm lattice state, which certainly has anomalous Hall effect. I'm not sure if the helical state does or not, in fact. So that's part of the question, Eduardo. So please, before you get home tonight, email me the answer.
No, but I think I saw I
thought it was in the Sturm lattice state.
Maybe it's in the Sturm lattice state.
Yeah.
But I wonder if the time growth symmetry, I mean, some combination time growth symmetry and the space group, if those are broken, I mean, that means.
Probably that. I mean, there's been a classic for topological insulators where you basically have to worry about the same things. This has been classified, right? So the antiferromagnets, magnetic.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay.
So maybe one can draw some inspiration from that.
Yes.
That depends on how you cut it. Then whether you break the translational symmetry or inversion symmetry that protects the surface, right?
Okay. So
the band structure, basically.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
It's a 3D. So what is what do you mean by non-zero Hall magnets and how large are they?
So which direction?
That is the direction of, in the analogy.
It's 1-1-1.
So magnetic perpendicular, along 1-1-1.
You don't need a magnetic field, but...
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So ideally, if you had a single domain material and you made a Hall bar perpendicular to a 1-1-1 plane, you should measure a voltage. Nobody has.
I see. But how large it is per layer?
That's about the same as it is in iron. According to this, intrinsic.
But it's much less than quantum gravity. I mean, how close to magnetic dilation?
Yeah, so it's some number like 3D material.
Yeah.
So it's some.
But it's per layer.
It's some number, like E squared over H times KF. Okay, yeah. That's the scale.
Oh, I see.
Okay, but 0.1 or so times,
also
times E squared over H KF.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's as big as it is in any case, I think.
Other questions? stop. Okay, let's okay. Go on the next one.
Do I need to put down the screen?
Oh, you don't need the screen.
We need a microphone.
Okay, so what I want to do is basically give a compliment to the talk that I gave yesterday. So yesterday I talked about exotic phases, exotic topological phases that we might have in oxides. So today I want to be a little bit more realistic and confront the shortcomings of those predictions. I mean, as soon as the thing will come up, basically I'll show you some phase diagrams where if we look at real pyrochlore transition metal oxides with iridium in them, for example. Maybe I need to reconnect. Okay, so this is where I want to be. So, I talked about 3D topological phases, some of these star phases, and other phases that people have predicted in these pyrochlore iridates. So here's a experimentally obtained phase diagram in the temperature ionic radius axes. So the materials here are some rare earth with two elements, some iridium with two, oxygen with seven. The iridiums have pyrochlore structure, as do these rare earths. And if we look at the phase at low temperature, pretty much all of these guys are magnetic insulators. So if it's magnetic, it's not going to be topological. At least none of the phases that I discussed, aside from the wild semi-metal, are potential candidates there. And this is one issue. I also mentioned the issue about the degeneracies at the gamma point, whether or not you have a four-fold degeneracy at the Fermi energy protected by point group symmetries. If that's the case, then you can't get it any kind of band insulator there. So, and it turns out that many of the materials, I'll show band structure for one of them, don't have that property. So the bulk systems here for iridates don't look particularly promising for topological phases, except for the wild semi-metal, at least not this class. Although one comment on that is, if it's possible that topological phases are hidden, so to speak, underneath these magnetic phases. So if you're at higher temperatures, so that you're above this magnetic ordering transition temperature, then the underlying band structure, if the material is insulating, might be a topological insulator. So it could be that at low temperatures, materials are magnetic, but if you're above that magnetic ordering temperature, then the system acts as if it were a topological insulator just at finite temperature. And we're always working at finite temperature, and experiment. All this photo emission studies that we've seen, say, from Zahid Hassan's group, they're all at finite temperature. They show these beautiful Dirac cones. So if the material were magnetic at 1 Kelvin, I don't think it is, but if it were, that data would look exactly the same. That's one point. Another point is, as theorists, it's useful to have precise classifications for invariance and topological properties when one system cannot be adiabatically deformed to another. But in practice, sometimes that's actually not very important. For example, going to Zahid Hassan's experiments again, he sees these beautiful Dirac cones on the surface, but his experiments are done in a magnetic field. I mean, at the very least, the Earth's magnetic field. So as far as I know, all claims of topological insulators are false because they all have broken time reversal symmetry due to the Earth's magnetic field. So it's a question of energy scales. The temperature is bigger than this magnetic energy. Doesn't matter. Of course, the temperature also being non-zero means, strictly speaking, it's not in its ground state. It's not really topological anymore in that case either. But that shouldn't really bother us, because what matters in terms of applications is, does it act like a topological insulator for what we're interested in? So those are just a few comments on these iridates. Now, the upside of this is that the iridates and thin film form do look like good candidates for topological phases, two-dimensional varieties, the Z2 type and Chern insulators. So I want to, in the remaining time, basically just give examples of thin films in these iridates and a neighboring class of systems, these perovskite oxides, where here rare is again R is a rare earth element and nickel oxygen. So these are very common. The guys that study oxides love these. STO is a perovskite type structure. So the LAO-STO interface, it's one that's received a lot of attention because of this electron gas that you get at the interface of two insulators. And it shows all kinds of properties, superconductivity, interesting magnetism, etc. So these classes of systems are also candidates for topological phases. So let me just jump to the punchline. I should mention this work. This is one of the most important early works in topological phases in thin oxide films. So the important ingredient in terms of the perovskite structure, which is shown here, it's relatively simple, is to grow along this 1-1-1 direction. So usually 0-0-1 is the typical growth direction. This direction turns out to be convenient for realizing topological phases. What you have, if you cut in that direction, is a triangular lattice of transition metal ions, and if you grow one on top of the other, those triangular lattices are shifted in such a way that you form basically a buckled honeycomb lattice. So if you project it down, it looks like a honeycomb lattice, and then you immediately start thinking of graphene, Kane-Mealy type physics, etc. So these guys carried out some kind of model Hamiltonian studies, band structure calculations for some candidate systems, some of which don't exist. For example, this material here, this lanthanum gold 8, is supposed to have in this bilayer type system a 1400 Kelvin gap, but the experimentalists tell me that no one has ever grown that, and it doesn't look like it's stable, people that have tried to grow it. So what we have done is basically look at this lanthanum nickelate, which is a very common system that people have studied a lot in the context of high temperature superconductivity. The hope is that this nickel, which sits in these EG orbitals, one might find a way in a thin film system to create an orbital polarization and change this two-band model to a one-band model, therefore map it onto the Hubbard model, and maybe get a high temperature superconductor in the nickelates as one has in cuprates. The short story is it hasn't worked out. But we...
By the way, we still don't know if this is going to be one band Hubbard model.
Yeah, that's true. That's the assumption, but it's not clear if that's the key element for high TC. Yeah.
It's part of the revision.
Yeah, that's right. Right. So yeah, I'm just giving the church line. So yeah, God's been speaking to us, so I should talk about it. So what we did is try to make contact with experimental systems by using density functional theory to calculate the band structure. And the black curve here is the band structure for this bilayer. We fit that to a tight binding model and treated the various Hund's couplings, inter and intra-orbital interactions in a Hartree-Fock calculation. And we came up with this phase diagram here in the space of Hund's coupling over Hubbard U and second neighbor hopping over first neighbor hopping. Basically, this axis is unimportant, doesn't matter. And for LNO, lanthanum nickelate, it looks like one is sitting right here in this region, which has an anti-ferromagnetic type orbital order and a ferromagnetic type magnetic order. So that may be interesting, but the one which is most interesting is the one which is directly above it. So that's a Chern insulator, quantum anomalous Hall state, which is simultaneously ferromagnetic. And so it's very close to being at that phase boundary. So we've repeated these calculations looking at all these realistic lattice distortion effects. The punchline is that it doesn't make any difference. Everything is stable to the crystal distortion effects. Experimentally, they do find insulating systems, samples, but they haven't done the kind of measurement that they need to do. They haven't done a Hall measurement to see if this really has a Hall conductance or if it is a boring insulator, you know, due to non-topological features. So in my remaining minute, I will summarize our results on these pyrochlore iridate thin films. So the blue curve here is a GGA band structure calculation. The red curve is a tight binding fit. The important thing in the iridates is this fit is not great, but to get something even that good, you have to have third neighbor hopping. So longer range hoppings are very important in these iridates. And this is a phase diagram. It's not the final one for a bilayer system. This phase here is a Z2 topological insulator. The red phase here is a churn insulator. And the typical range of interactions one would expect between 1 and 2 eV. And it's not shown here, but competing with this orange phase, which is just a boring magnetic insulator phase, is a churn insulator phase. It's very, very close in energy. We can barely resolve it in the Hartree-Fock calculation. So for experimentalists looking for churn insulators, there's very good hope to see them in these tri-layer systems of iridates and maybe even a Z2, two-dimensional Z2 topological insulator in oxides. So that's basically what I wanted to say. So they do. They don't see ferromagnetism. But it could be that there are domains which are randomly oriented, so it cancels out because their measurement does not have very good local resolution.
System where you showed magnetism, are they mainly from rare earth ions or iridium?
They're mainly from the iridium. It depends a little bit on the system.
It can be both. But yeah.
I think that that's
typically rare earth carry large moments.
Yeah, that's correct. Now I forget exactly how these change the shell filling, but one thing that I do want to flag there, this particular material, this praseodymium,
which is metallic in the bulk. It's a lot like the lanthanum nickelate, which is metallic. This one has an anomalous Hall effect in it, but without any observable magnetic magnetism. So yeah, no observable magnetic order. Yeah. So they measure a transport. So they measure an anomalous Hall effect there, but there's no magnetic order of any type that they can detect. So it breaks time reversal symmetry, but without any kind of magnetic order that's detectable. So some people have been thinking about this. No, I mean, the experiment. I'm saying there, so it doesn't have a magnetic moment, but it doesn't have any kind of, anti-ferromagnetic type thing, which. Well, neutron scattering is very problematic on iridium because it's a big absorber. So I don't know what I think resonant X-ray scattering, muon. So the experimentalists claim that there's no detectable order in any probe that they've used.
Or NMR.
Yeah, I suspect that NMR has been used. Yeah.
Is it formally
equipped? Okay. Very good question. I don't know. So I have to confess that I have not thought a lot about this particular material, although I am starting to now. So it may be a non-Fermi liquid. Actually, it turns out that this since you mentioned non-Fermi liquids, I have a paper with a collaborator, Jack Chakalian, who grows these samples where he looked at neodymium nickelate. So this one right here on various substrates of different amounts of strain, tensile and compressive, and he finds beautiful stable non-Fermi liquid physics with exponents of 4/3 and 5/3 in the transport, which I think are rather rare. At least I could not find many materials that exhibit. So it's not linear T.
In one of the dichlorogenates, titanium diselenide, it has a regime where the CW is suppressed under pressure and there is a superconducting dome. Mm-hmm. So above the superconducting dome, there is a regime where this is exponents like that, but not over many decades. So I never.
Yeah, so this is.
I don't know how much to trust these exponents.
Well, yeah. So this is over like 100 Kelvin. So.
It's the same.
Yeah. But it's very stable. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Thank you.
So this was, I was referring to a bulk system. Yeah. Although I'll probably think about thin films.
So I'll be very quick. You can miss lunch and tea, but not your flight. So in the last 2 days, you have heard about graphene from several people, from starting from Philip's first talk and one of the latest talks by Abanin. So we all look for novel physics, new material, which should be simple. I mean, mercury, a very simple monovalent metal, was studied by Kemmerling once, and it led to superconductivity. And then very recently, carbon, very simple material, not like lanthanum copper oxide or one of those iridates, you know, which is very common. So we look for very simple materials with new physics. And I believe that it is there in this material, which I call as a carbon, it's not a carbon copy of graphene. So if you look at the literature, thanks to our electronic structure colleagues, they have studied in detail silicene, which is an analog of graphene, a two-dimensional hexagonal net of silicon atoms. And as you know, in the periodic table, silicon is a cousin of carbon, or I don't know, sun down this way. So according to electronic structure calculations, it is exactly like graphene, except that the band is narrowed. So there are lots of theoretical proposals of what will happen. And also, there is some amount of spin orbit coupling, because it's a heavy compared to carbon, the atomic number is larger. So, but however, there exists some 5-6 experimental results. When I looked at it, it did not look like graphene from any way. So it looks extremely different from graphene. So I started looking at it. And recently, I put a paper in the archive. I will give the reference to it, with a provocative title that this is a prospective playground for room temperature superconductivity and the novel spin liquid physics. So I will try to convince you in the next few minutes that it is so. So if you look at, we have to go to basic quantum chemistry. Carbon has an atomic radius of about 0.77 angstrom unit. Silicon has about 1.17 angstrom unit. So it's about fairly large, 50-60% larger than that. So that seems to make very fundamental difference, which has been well recognized by quantum chemists, of course. Because, for example, quantum chemists have been thinking about this benzene analog of, in which carbon is replaced by silicon. And they have done calculations shown that this should be very unstable because of the larger atomic radius. The carbon-carbon distance in graphene is about 1.44 angstrom unit, whereas that in this kind of system is 2.3. So the atoms have gone apart. So the p overlap of the pi orbital should be reduced. And when you do electronic structure calculation, that's what you see. You remember, if you do band theory, essentially you have, this is a Fermi level, this is a so-called pi band, and this is a pi star band. And there are sigma bands overlapping with this. And we focus our attention on this. In graphene, this is about 18 electron volt. Very broad band. And our Fermi level is here. And very interesting physics takes place because of this vanishing density of states and Dirac cone. If you do the same electronic structure calculation for this system, silicene, what you find is it is reduced to 1/3 of the value. It's about 6 electron volt. So it's a remarkable detection if you talk to people, you know. By expanding this lattice, things have got reduced. And people have worried about Hubbard U for graphene, but it's about 9 to 8 electron volt, which is very small compared to this broad pi star band. So it can be ignored for practical purposes. However, this is not reduced substantially when you come here. So the U seems to be reasonable compared to the bandwidth. So you go back to the famous discussions of Mott, that if you take a hypothetical Mott insulator or a collection of hydrogen atoms forming, let's say, a square lattice, When the lattice parameter is very small, it's a metal, then you expand it, it becomes an insulator. So you have some lattice parameter which is getting expanded. So there is a critical value. And then there is a charge gap. So you have a metal, you have an insulator, Mott insulator. So I have, based on some simple theoretical analysis and phenomenological considerations, I find that graphene is somewhere here and the silicene is here. So that puts the effective model for silicene as a simple Heisenberg model with a J which is embarrassingly large, close to 1 electron volt. In cuprates, you may recall that J is about 0.15 electron volt and the bandwidth is about 2 electron volt. Already that gives you rich superconducting physics and so on. Here you have something much larger, but of course it's somewhere close to Mott transition. So when I look, I have no time to explain the experimental results. There are 4 key experimental results. One is photo emission on silicate grown on zirconium diborate, where you don't see Dirac cone, which you expect. Instead, you see a considerably narrowed band at the Fermi level around K and K prime pons. And then there is some tunneling studies on silicene on silver substrate, where they have added some extra carriers by putting sodium atoms. Where you do tunneling, you find a remarkable BCS type of superconducting gap behavior with a delta, 2 delta by KBTC, it's about 20. So they see that this tunneling feature disappears around 40 Kelvin, but however, the gap is large. So this is a very intriguing experimental observation. So which is saying that if you take this Mott insulator point of view, it looks like a pseudo gap phase of Mott insulator, where the order parameter amplitude is very large, but phase fluctuations have killed superconductivity. Then, exactly. So that's, so the proposal is that it should be an antiferromagnet, but there are no studies. At the moment, they have barely managed to stabilize monolayer silicon on some substrates. And the only study that is available is scanning tunneling microscope and photo emission. And both of them show anomalous behavior. So far, there is no study of magnetism. So since we are close to antiferromagnetic with the Mott transition, the antiferromagnetic order may not be there. There could be interesting spin liquid physics, which has been worried by people, including a friend in the audience. So it's a very fascinating system, in my opinion. And there is an additional complication, or degree of freedom, which makes it richer, that in the case of carbon, you have primarily sp2 bonding. Here it turns out, because of the energy difference between 3s and 3p is smaller compared to that between 2s and 2p in the case of carbon, it can allow for a small sp2 mixing. That leads to some vertical displacement of this silicene atoms with reflection to the flat planes. So that leads to very interesting superstructures, which is completely absent in the case of graphene. So putting all these things together, I have come up with a proposal that this indeed is a very novel material. We should study it carefully. And there is rich dividend in the sense of it's likely to be a good Mott insulator with a large J. So if I do simple RVB kind of theory, the TC is embarrassingly large. So you can find some of these things in my recent archive paper. The U is about 6 electron volt. And there is also an additional nearest neighbor V, which adds to it effectively. If there is time, I can discuss it. But it effectively pushes you to this region. I can discuss it in detail.
What's the lattice structure?
Honeycomb lattice. So as far as the lattice structure is concerned.
How would you get 1 EV from that? I'm just taking the ratio. You have 18 EV as a bandwidth.
Yeah,
it's very simple. The hopping parameter is 1 electron volt. For graphene, it is 3 electron volt. So T 4 T square over U. And also, from the photo emission experiment, again, there is a gap, which I interpreted. It's about half of this.
I was trying to get there from
18 electron volts. No. I'm talking about silicene, which is, that's an important thing, that it's narrowed. So also, I have been searching for new materials trying to give some guidance where you could get superconductivity, high temperature superconductivity. So I have, sorry, I'll just advertise with this. And so if you do a Google fivefold way to a new superconductor, so the hope is that they will at least buy one of them. You know, there are five experimentally. So you will find that it's available in Indian Academy of Sciences, some special volume. So this is, you know, now, in fact, if you go to my computer and open up a special folder, new materials, I have literally dozens of new materials which I wish to study from physics point of view, but unfortunately, there is no time. Thank you.
For those who want to get a secret email. Any questions?
So you think this material superconducts?
According to one STM study, you see a beautiful canonical gap structure like this when you do STM analysis, and you heat the system around 40 Kelvin, it disappears. It becomes essentially like this. So,
it could also be an insulator.
Exactly. So they have argued that based on the carrier density, there is no simple nesting or there is no charge density wave insulator that is arising. So it's a...
It's a zero momentum state here. It's a, you have a... It's a conical lattice. You just simply...
No, I think the idea is that at half-filling is a counter from minus. But the dough, it weighs at a little bit
dough.
So basically, you get a scramble. And then it's like cooperate, but J is a solid Kelvin or one flow.
Exactly.
The tensor half Kelvin. Yeah. So that's maybe the idea.
It's cooperate with very little margin.
So why haven't they done the squid measurements on this?
Exactly. That's what I'm telling them. So they thought it's a carbon copy so far. So I'm telling people that there is a possibility of a different kind of physics here.
But,
so yeah, that's a good question. So if you look at this honeycomb lattice model, it started, so it's a D plus ID. D plus ID is very dominant. In fact, there are works confirming by Zhao Gan and Gu, and also our own work.
Graphene
also. Exactly. So, let me answer that question. If you take this phase diagram, the Fermi phase diagram, that is carrier density as a function of U over T, if you sit at half filling, you have a Mott insulator, and then you have semi metal. So, graphene sits somewhere here. So, you can dope it, and still you get remarkable superconductivity. And in relative units, when you normalize it, silicon sits somewhere here. So it's like a doped Mott insulator. The physics will be that of doped Mott insulator. Because of the honeycomb lattice, the nature of superconducting autoparameter is D plus ID rather than D.
But doesn't that have a node at the K point? At charge neutrality, at the K.
At the charge neutrality, there is no superconductivity. It's a Mott insulator.
Yeah, okay.
You move away from it.
And you get immediately D plus ID.
Exactly. There are, you know, numerical studies and recently tensor network studies and various studies which confirm that if you take a Hubbard model and for a range of U, you get D plus ID superconductivity.
Okay, because of time, I think that we'll conclude this session here. Let's thank
you. I think we should thank the organizers.
Okay, yeah.
So next year is on us, I guess.
Yeah, well, maybe there's some next year we have some research along those materials. Okay, have a nice trip home.
Thank you.
Thank you.